the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, new day, new events. It's almost like a new world. You know, every day seems to be something completely different. So it's good that we have a lot to talk about today.
Isn't that a Monty Python thing? And now for something completely different, or not?
Exactly.
So, all right.
Or the same.
Exactly. So what is the latest with regard to Israeli elections?
Well, yesterday President Rivlin decided to invite Prime Minister Netanyahu to form the next government. And that was not automatic at all or necessarily expected by people, for a number of different reasons. First of all, because only 4 months ago, Netanyahu had failed to form a government. And so the big question that's being asked is, what's new now? What's different now that could potentially give him the way to form a government, which he didn't have before? And I don't really think we've got an answer to that. Everybody seems to have a slightly different view. The fact that there are more Arab seats in the Knesset is the answer that I was given by some person who said, you know, that's kind of put a little bit of urgency around the issue. People suddenly realize that when the Arab vote is mobilized and people come out to vote, that they can actually win quite a lot of seats in the Knesset. And there is concern that not that the Arabs are represented in the Knesset, but rather the fact that the Arab parties are very anti-Zionist and so therefore are very anti-Israel. And some even consider the Arab parties to be kind of traitors in the way that they promote the way they go and meet with terrorists and they promote terrorism and those who perpetrate terror attacks against Israel. So they're not very loyal to the State of Israel, and that for some people is a sense of urgency around this issue. Also, there's been a slight adjustment in the number of seats. They could manage to pick up one seat at the expense of the ultra-Orthodox parties, the United Torah Judaism Party. And so there is only now one seat difference in the number of seats that were won between Kahol Lavan and Likud. That is the final result, ultimately. And so there are people who think that things are different from what happened 4 or 5 months ago. I'm not entirely convinced, but I think that the reason that President Rivlin has decided to invite Netanyahu to form the government is because simply that when he invited the party leaders to express who they would like to support in forming a government, that Netanyahu simply had more support in terms of the number of seats than Kahol Lavan, than Benny Gantz. And also because of the fact that there seems to just be a split, a real split in the support that's going on between Gantz and Netanyahu. Rivlin, when asking Netanyahu and when inviting him to form a government, acknowledged a few things. First of all, that no single leader has 61 seats, which are required to form a simple majority. Right. So he's acknowledged that. The second thing that he acknowledged, which was a little sad in my view, is that the efforts to try to bring the leaders together to form a national unity government effectively failed, that there wasn't a deal to be done there. And so therefore, Rivlin had no choice but to choose one of the party leaders to form a government. And what he said was that he was obliged to choose the person who was more likely or most likely to form a government. And in this case, he decided that that was Netanyahu. So I don't know whether Rivlin might feel that Netanyahu has the ability to convince Lieberman to come in and form a government with him, in which case he would have the required 61 seats. But Avigdor Lieberman and his Yisrael Beiteinu party have remained very, very firm in saying that all the time that the government includes the ultra-Orthodox parties and does not represent a national unity government, that he would not be part of it. So that is really where we stand at the moment as we go into this Rosh Hashanah weekend, where we really have no clearer understanding of which way the wind is going to blow and how precisely Netanyahu is going to be able to form a government, because at the moment it really, you know, there is just no clarity around that issue. And even with the most creative thinking, people can't see how he will manage to somehow get those 61 members of Knesset to support him in forming a government.
What's interesting to me is that the press is starting, that whereas the press has been quite anti-Netanyahu, there's almost now an implied criticism of Gantz not being particularly flexible, because we can see that of the two of them, Netanyahu seems to be a little bit more compromising in trying to find a solution, whereas Benny Gantz isn't, or isn't coming across that way. And I just wonder how far he can go with this kind of rigidity before public sentiment flips completely back to Netanyahu. And I can tell you he is in danger of doing that if he pushes this too far. And unless he's reading the sentiment really carefully, I think that Benny Gantz is in danger.
Well, I just wonder how much of that is kind of public perception and being touted by the press, and how much of it is really real.
The reason I believe that is because the press until now has been very anti-Netanyahu.
I agree. We've spoken about that.
So the fact that you're starting to see this little bit of change coming in signifies to me that there's a little bit of frustration around it. I don't know. Obviously, everything we read is public, that publication's perception and agenda. Well,
sure.
We have to be careful. But the fact that I'm seeing it flipping the other way to me is significant.
Well, it is significant. And I think the other interesting little thing to throw into the mix here is that actually the public quite respected Lieberman's lack of rigidity. And which, you know, a lot of people were blaming him for the second round of elections because of the fact that he wasn't prepared to compromise, as a result of which no government was formed and we went to the second round of elections. And so, you know, there were many attempts to lay the blame on him to try to weaken him. But ultimately, his standing by his principles really strengthened his public perception rather than weakening it. And so, you know, I just think again about whether Benny Gantz is doing the right or the wrong thing. I mean, if indeed he is showing a lack of flexibility, and, you know, we probably believe that there is some truth to that. We just wonder whether that is going to enhance his standing within the public or not, because I think the public at the moment are quite really looking for somebody within the political sphere who is prepared to stand up and to make a position of principle and not to be swayed by all kinds of bribes or all kinds of promises that never seem to come to fruition, just in the interests of pursuing their own personal situation. So again, I agree that the press is starting to become a little bit more critical of Gantz. But what I can see probably happening in this process is that after the 21 days have passed and Netanyahu has failed to form a government, which I think is probably what's going to happen. And by the way, just to add another thing while we're talking about it, is that this was exactly Benny Gantz's strategy. He originally was hoping that he would be invited to form the government, but then his advisors flipped the other way and said it would be better for the president to invite Netanyahu to form the government, for him to fail, and then for the president to come to Benny Gantz to say, why don't you have a go? But I think that neither of them have the ability to form a government, and it doesn't matter who goes first and it doesn't matter who goes second, because they both will ultimately fail to get the required 61 seats to support a government. And I can't see Rivlin agreeing to allow a minority government to be formed. And so perhaps this is the way that we have to go through this whole convoluted process until we eventually get to the other side and people understand that a government of national unity is no longer a choice that you make. It's an imperative. And therefore, certain compromises which were not being made today, or people are not prepared to make today, they may be prepared to make in a month, another month or month and a half from now, because the lie of the land at that stage will look entirely different. And so that is my expectation, is that whoever will try to form a government will fail. The president might ask Gantz to do so after Netanyahu has had a go. He probably will also fail. And then there will really be a lot of pressure to form this national unity government, which is the only proper a way in which a government can realistically be formed.
And by definition, a national unity government means that everybody's, certainly that the players are going to all be unhappy, you know, because they're not going to get exactly what they want, and that means compromise. But that's an unfortunate reality. We've been through two elections in a period of 5 months. Going to a third election is very, I think, unlikely to change anything. Why would it?
It certainly won't change anything. But I think, you know, that there's two things that come out of this negotiation process. One is, what are you prepared to compromise on in order to do what's right for the state of Israel? To get a government together and, as you say, become an unhappy party, but at least there's a government and let's go ahead on that basis. But I think what perhaps is more important than that is, what are you absolutely unwilling to compromise on? And that is really where the real question lies, because until now, you know, politicians have been perceived in Israel as being willing to do almost everything and to almost sell their grandmother in order just to achieve certain personal gain.
Right, yeah.
And that has not sat well with the Israeli public, because, you know, whatever is promised in the election campaign leading up to the election never seems to be fulfilled, because all of a sudden it's compromised away and out of government policy when the government is ultimately formed. So the question is, what are they not going to be prepared to compromise on, and how are they going to achieve those compromises in a way that really puts a government together that people can actually respect and believe in?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely fascinating to see where this is going to go. Before I leave you, the Israeli Air Force has made history by appointing a female flight squadron leader for the very first time. This is an incredible story. What is known about this trailblazing woman?
Well, we don't know her name. She's simply referred to in the press as Lieutenant Colonel G. So in order to protect her identity, and there is even a picture of her with her face blacked out, actually being congratulated by Air Force Chief Amiram Norkin, who was very, very excited about the appointment of Lieutenant Colonel G. He described her as a mother of two boys and a role model and an object of admiration to thousands of women in the state of Israel. And then he went on to say that he believes it's our duty to harness female potential. And I think the Air Force is really doing that in spades. If you look at Lieutenant Colonel G, she joined the Air Force in 2003. She went through the pilot training course, which is a very, very highly respected and sought after course. She became a pilot flying an aircraft, which is for carrying goods and, you know, Air Force equipment and things like that. And she was flying this plane for quite a number of years before she was promoted to become a deputy flight squadron leader. And now finally she's been promoted to the position, to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, and she has ultimately been assigned responsibility to be the flight squadron leader for the Nachshon squadron, flight squadron number 122. And so after having been a cargo aircraft pilot, she's now really taking up a very, very senior position for the first time in the Air Force. And she's not the only trailblazing woman in the Air Force. There are a number of other women who are achieving also amazing things. We heard about Major M, who was appointed to command the an Air Force Operational Command and Control Unit and was also promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. And there was another lady, Captain Y. She was an F-15 navigator, and she has been serving in the Spearhead Squadron, which flies F-15 jets. And she's also been appointed as a deputy commander of a squadron, as well as women who are taking on responsibility for squadrons of drones that are being operated out of the unmanned area vehicles, not only drones, the smaller ones, but also the larger unmanned area vehicles, which are being flown out of the Air Force. So some really, really great news for us to go into the Rosh Hashanah weekend to think about how the Air Force is doing some amazing jobs, some amazing work in general, and how ladies are really coming through the ranks as navigators, as pilots, and then taking on more senior positions after that. So this is something that we feel very proud of.
We do indeed. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, I wish you a Shana Tova, a happy, blessed, healthy and fulfilled, peaceful year ahead. We don't speak to you on Friday, so and Monday and Tuesday, of course, is a Rosh Hashanah. So we'll be back with you on Wednesday morning.
I look forward to it. I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom, a great long weekend, a Shana Tova, a Chag Sameach. Let's hope that the new year will bring good things for all of us individually as well as for us collectively with our new government and in our country. And I hope that we will be back on Wednesday to talk about more things, interesting things in the new year.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock.